This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's August 24th, 2020. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment, you'd like to contribute information to the show, and are listening on Facebook Live right here, right now, you can comment on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, or you can email me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. We are recording our shows on Mondays now using Facebook Live and then playing them at our normal times on Wednesday at WHUS 91.7 FM in stores. We will continue to do this until we are allowed back in the studio on the UConn campus. And you can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, or now on Spotify. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Ron's rant of the week. Well, last week I went off on horse poop and, you know, and on the trails and all that. So I have to do a side note on this right now. Fran's probably looking over my notes right here and laughing.
Speaking, horse poop was a thing this week.
Exactly. So side note, speaking of poop, Lancaster, Pennsylvania. So Fran and I were in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Lancaster County. And it is the land of the largest number of Amish in the United States. Yeah. And so we see a lot of buggies down there when we're down there. We were down there for the Farm to Fork Fondo, and it was really fun, and we had a great time. But boy, are there a lot of buggies on the road. And with buggies comes horses. And with horses comes more horse poop. Horse poop on the road. Well, there are no rules down there. They just poop on the road, and you deal with it. And as one of my, It was Randy. Randy, the bicycle mechanic that we had. We had a pro bike mechanic there this past weekend. And Randy, big shout out to Randy. He did a great job. He lives there. And he said, if you think the horse poop is bad now, he said, you should see what it's like after it rains out. And he said, you just don't want to take a drink out of your water bottle. Because there's just everywhere. It just kicks up and it's everywhere. And, you know, the rain washes the roads, but not completely and whatever. So anyway, the horse poop. So, you know, sometimes you just have to learn to tolerate certain things because that's just the way it is. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the Amish a little bit later on in the show here. This is the Righteous Cyclist, a poem, also falling under Ron's rant of the week. And it says here, here lies the body of William Gray. He died preserving his right of way. He was right, dead right, as he sped along, but he's just as dead as if he'd been wrong. So, what does that mean? It means if you're going to rant and you're going to complain to cars and have your issues with them, just don't do it so much that you end up not being alive to do that anymore. So that's a little bit more. And we'll have some discussion about being hit by a car while cycling maybe later on in the show. Have you ever been hit by a car when you're cycling? Post it on the Facebook page. I'd love to hear your story. And then there is I also have a segment here that'll talk about how not to get hit by cars, important safety lessons in bicycle safety. On a positive side, seems like this is an interesting thing because every week I go to do the positive side, I just can't get away with one. I've got to do more. And I'm going to mention this one, but we're going to talk about it more next show just because it came to me late and I didn't see it right away. But I will talk about it a little bit more. Huge tip of the cycling cap, big time to the Portland, Oregon, and once again, for traffic gardens. And they say, traffic gardens bloom in Portland. Next week's show, I will highlight that. That's my teaser. So that's just to keep you interested for next week. In the old news that completely slipped by Pedal and Ron department, while riding in the Farm to Fork Fondo this past weekend, one of the people I was riding with, which is Sophie, big shout out to Sophie and Ann, by the way, if you're listening. I had a blast with you guys. You're a lot of fun. We just had a good time. Sophie told me that she had taken a Lyft ride recently, and this typo here, this popped out on her Lyft app. Okay. She took a Lyft, and the Lyft adopts the Dutch reach maneuver for preventing Doring cyclists. And of course, local advocates are partly to thank for this. But anyway, so what has happened is she ordered a Lyft, and while she was looking at her app, the Lyft app told her to please be careful when opening the door so you don't door a cyclist. And they emphasize the use of the Dutch reach, which is right hand if you're on the left hand side of the car, meaning the driver's side of the car. Right hand reaches over and goes to undo the door. As you do it, you're looking back, and so it gives you an opportunity to get a visual if someone is coming or not. So anyway, I looked it up because I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. I had never heard of that. And of course, it's old news. It was a year ago that this happened. And it's not just Lyft. It's also Uber. They do the same thing. They are very, very aware of the fact that there are riders on bicycles that are coming up on the left side of the vehicle and that you should be very, very careful about that. So I thought that was kind of cool. And the Boston Globe, of course, wrote a big article about it. And pretty much feel that, you know, they were part of making this happen because they were a very strongly worded letter to officials from Uber and Lyft demanding the companies educate drivers about the hazards of parking and pulling over in bike lanes and on sides of roads. So that's kind of a cool thing. But as part of the letter, bike advocates called on both Lyft and Uber to sit down with stakeholders and discuss safety measures that could be adopted to protect cyclists. Included on that list of demands was to send smartphone alerts to drivers and passengers, reminding them to check for cyclists before opening the door. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So big shout out. That worked. So as I always say, if you want to get things done, you've got to open your mouth. You got to let people know. Don't be afraid to talk about it. The worst thing that happens is maybe you're not right. Maybe you are right. And these things can be discussed and negotiated, and we can get our roads to be safer by doing that. So anyway, just thought that was a cool thing. It was brought to my attention by the people I was riding with this past weekend. It is just so cool. It's so, so cool. So I wanted to mention a few other things on a positive side because it's just there's so much positive going on right now. Oh, can you feel it? It's beautiful. So somehow the Amish got it right when it turns to transportation. Not motorized vehicles. They're not doing that. They're using little buggies and carts. But I'm going to tell you right now, the drivers in Lancaster County are so considerate to bicycles and buggies. Very, very noticeable, very outstanding. Wouldn't you say that, Fran?
Yeah.
That it just like, you know, I mean, I had cars that I was with a few people. We were doing small group tours this weekend down in Lancaster for Farm to Fork. And I was in small groups and we would be, you know, waiting at an intersection and the cars just would come to a stop and let us go. And it was like, really? You don't have to stop, but they stop anyway.
Well, they're used to the buggies.
But they're so used to the buggies that that's made the road safer. So as I have said in the past on my whole advocacy rants that I do, the way to make the road safer is not to put out more bike paths. It's to put more bicycles on the road. There's the evidence right there. That's how it works.
And buggies.
And buggies, too. We'll accept the buggies. We like the Amish. The Amish are so nice. They're very friendly. They wave to us. They really don't speak to us because it's not within their culture. But they're super friendly, and they wave, and their kids are just cute as cute can be. Oh, my God.
And
they love to wave at the bikes.
And they love to wave at the chicken car.
And also, Fran was driving the chicken car this weekend, which if you've ever done a Farm to Fork Fondo, you know it's a little Ford Focus or something is what it is. And it's got chickens all over it. And it's very, very, you know, it's the chicken car. It's kind of the thing. And the local Amish just found it extremely amusing to see this chicken car driving around.
Well, chickens are very important to
them. Well, they are very important to them. So So anyway, as I looked at this a little bit more, and I'll talk about this a little bit more later in the show, but car drivers, talks about car drivers, whenever it's legal to pass, can pass and blah, 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 blah. But it talks about the protocol of being safe with buggies on the roads of Pennsylvania up to the point where they actually have a transportation PDF on it. So anyway, another shout out to Steve Sokolowski. More updates on bridge construction on the Airline Trail North. The construction, you can see that little picture there, Fran, but nobody else can. There, it go on to the friends of the Airline Trail North, I think this is what he has it as. It's on Facebook, and you'll get to see pictures as he updates them along the way. But the abutments that they're building over route for 169, for the big bridge that's going to go over 169, it's gorgeous. They're doing a phenomenal job. It's very beautiful. Lots of like native stone look to it. It's very, very cool. So check it out. It's getting a lot of attention. Some of these roads will be on the other roads where they're putting underpasses in. They're going to be ready by October, November is what they're calling for right now. I think that's very optimistic. But you know, cause I know how long construction takes, but hey, it might happen. So that will be really, really cool. They're putting in, new work on wings and substructure that will hold concrete hoops to make the tunnel. So there's going to be some more tunnels out there. It's just way, way cool. So much to talk about today. So many things that are going on that I completely missed on the maintenance minute. I don't have a maintenance minute for you this week, but that's okay. We had three on the positives, so that's good. We'll go with that. But I am going to touch base now right into the content of our show. We're going to talk about last week we touched on road rage, but we ran out of time. So I did a piece last week. If you check out episode 211, I think it is, you will find that I ended the show with a touch on what do you do with road rage? How do you handle it? What, you know, when you're dealing with an angry driver, that sort of thing. And, how to avoid drivers with road rage. And so I promised you that I was going to also tell you that I found it on Psychology Today, The Psychology of Road Rage.
Wow.
So there's a thing here, you know, if you need proof that you're no longer living in a 24/7 world, but more like a 72/7 world, look around at the highway and see as you drive from home, work, or school. The current pace of life finds many of your fellow drivers with eyes locked on their phones and feet stomped on the gas pedal. These days, it's hard to feel like the drivers to your left and right have become more territorial, more aggressive, and just plain meaner when they get behind the wheel. And is this the affliction known as road rage, a larger symptom of general anger problem? I would say yes. I would say that there are many more angry people driving vehicles right now. And you can see why. I mean, your life depends upon the attentive nature of the person who is also out there on the road, both by bicycle and also by automobile. So, you know, it's like people are speeding, they're changing lanes with no signals. We saw a lot of this. We were on the road for 5.5 hours each way. So we saw an awful lot of this too, as we were driving just on the roads. And then we got to Lancaster County and all the cars were nice. It was like, wow, this is cool. So you see it every day on our roads. People are speeding, they're changing lanes, no signals, weaving across 3 or 4 lanes of traffic, traveling too closely to either side of your car. There's all sorts of crazy things. Now all the cars are being outfitted with cameras and sensors to wake you up when you get too close to somebody's car. It's insane. And it is the cell phone that is to blame for that, I think. I think the cell phone holds a lot of responsibility. And the cell phone industry holds a lot of responsibility to the bad behavior that's on the road. That and the fact that our departments of transportation are making our roads wider and faster. And that is the wrong answer, wrong way to go, absolutely wrong. We had this discussion a number of weeks ago about how fast a vehicle has to go to create a major harmful situation with a cyclist or a walker or anybody else on the road. And 20 miles an hour is kind of the safest way, because you have a 1 in 10 chance of not dying. Or you have 1 chance of dying in that situation. Increase the speed by double up to 40 miles an hour, and you have a 1 in 10 chance of living. So our roads are too fast. Roads are too fast in many situations, especially in urban situations where, you know, they just don't need to be that fast, and that needs to end. But I will probably preach about that for till the day I die, and I have not yet. Where's my wood? Right here. Wooden desk. Remember those? Wooden desks. I have not yet been hit by a motorized vehicle on the road, and I've been riding for a real long time. So this used to be a largely male problem, and it has crossed gender lines. Women may not get into roadside fistfights or point guns at each other, but they can drive just as aggressively, rudely, and even dangerously. It's the rare instance when a male and female aggression is on display in near equal amounts. For many men, aggression is supposed to be overt. For a woman, it's more covert. We put them both behind the wheel, late for something, angry about something else, and in no mood for courtesy, and their behaviors will compare. So anyway, there is a segment. I'm not going to get real deep into this because I have a lot more things to talk about here today. But the psychology of road rage, you want to check it out on psychologytoday.com. Worth reading, a good read. Kind of explains things a little bit more. And hopefully, you know, you can learn something from it. Or if you are someone who has a road rager in your network, just pass it over to him. Let him read it for a little bit, because it's a psychological disorder, okay? It needs to be attended to. But anyway, that's from Psychology Today. I thought it was really interesting. And then we talk about...
said don't engage.
Basically, you're not supposed to engage. You're just supposed to keep going. And you know, it's hard not to when you've got someone who almost takes you out. And especially on a bicycle, but definitely in a car too. I mean, the cars are well designed to handle the impacts now. They're much better than they used to be. We have airbags. We have, you know, all sorts of crush zones in the cars. So even if the car is involved in a high impact, usually, not always, but usually the drivers and passengers come out possibly pretty injured, but not dead. And so... But when you take that same amount of force, that 4,000-pound average vehicle weight, and put it against a normal cyclist who, even if they're riding on the heaviest bike out there, will not even come up to 400 pounds, it turns into a real problem. So anyway, road rage. Do you have it? Do you exercise it? Do you know how to control it? Do you know how to calmly approach a driver if they've done something horrible to you? Or are you aggressive about it? Yeah, you know, let me know. Feed some information over to me here. I love to hear all this stuff.
You routinely put your life in danger.
I do, but I do it in a very calm manner. I generally speaking, most of the time, I will say, unless it was really, really horrible, I will thank the driver who pulled over to talk to me about what they just did wrong and why I'm not so happy with them. And when you do that, you diffuse the situation pretty quickly, and then ask them if you could have an intelligent conversation about bicycle safety and car safety.
You just have to hope they don't pull out their rifle.
You do have to hope. But they already approached me with a deadly weapon. They've already been there.
That's fine.
And if they really wanted to kill me, they would have hit me. So, and once again, once you have initiated this and you have clearly stated through your cell phone, the wonderful weapon that you have, that you have their plate number and that you're on the phone with 911, they pretty much back down. They don't want to go to jail. They really don't. And so this is, there's an art of engagement. Okay. We'll leave it at that. So, going back to, where did I put that? Oh, not here right now. So anyway, going back to the horse and buggies in Pennsylvania and in Lancaster County. Did you know, Fran, you're going to appreciate this, did you know that there is a driver's manual for horse and buggy and usage of horse and buggies in Pennsylvania? Look at this. This is put out by the Department of Transportation in Pennsylvania. It's the Horse and Buggy Driver's Manual.
Do you have to have a driver's license for a horse and buggy?
You can only have a driver's license if you have a social security number and if you have, there's one other thing that you can't get, that Amish don't have, birth certificates. They don't have either. And because of that, they are not required to have a driver's license because there's no way you can issue it. Isn't that interesting?
Don't some Amish people drive cars?
No. No, some Mennonite people drive cars.
Okay,
not
so
Amish.
Mennonite people have social security numbers?
I guess they would have to. I'm not sure exactly why, but there are. I don't know all the rules as far as that goes. We learned a lot about the Amish this weekend. We learned a lot about why they dress in certain color dresses and different things that they do. We went to an actual Amish museum on our bike tour this weekend, and we got a pretty much a walkthrough in an Amish village and explained how everything worked for them. It was actually very interesting. I found it fascinating. But the forward on this just says, now more than ever, we as horse and buggy drivers need to be careful and observe the basic rules of safety when traveling on today's busy roads. There's more traffic going much faster than ever before, and we must do what we can to assure our own safety as well as that of the motorists with whom we must share the road. We've created a horse and buggy driver safety manual to assist with this effort. Proper operation of your horse and buggy on these busy roads can greatly reduce crashes. Now, the reason they did this is because there were a lot of people that were dying. A lot of Amish people were dying because of stupid motorized vehicle drivers. And also, maybe the Amish were not paying attention to the stoplights and turns and turn signals. Now you go down there and most of the buggies, unless they're really like the really old traditional Amish, they won't put any lights or anything on their buggies. They're out there. They just do it that way. But I would say that almost every buggy I saw, if not every buggy I saw, had signal lights on it, brake lights on it, all sorts of, and headlights on them too. And there's this whole manual that was designed, which I found really, really interesting, to explain this all, and they now have a way of understanding how to blend with the traffic that we have in what they call the English world. And this was all put together by the Center for Traffic Safety, the County of Lancaster, Lancaster County Amish Safety Committee, Lancaster County Planning Commission, Lancaster Highway Safety Council, members of the Plain Community, Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, and the Pennsylvania State Police, Troop J. So pretty cool stuff. Couldn't believe what I saw here. Talks about courtesy and conduct. Talks about traffic signs, signals, and pavement markings, horse handling and harnesses, buggy lighting, driving on the road, pedestrians, bicycles, and scooters, and other travel information. So it's all here, but the and do's and don'ts for night driving. You know, different things that you want to do. You want to make sure your batteries are charged up because they're using rechargeable batteries to run their lights. Just simple things. Don't forget to shut off your turn signal after you've completed a turn. Just really amazing stuff. The fact that they had to do this is, and that they're actually practicing it, is impressive to me. Very, very impressive. And I go back to what I said earlier on the show, that being that it's really nice to ride down there because the cars get it. And the only way they get it is because there are so many buggies on the road that they have to get it. So more people on bikes, safer roads. I'll say it again. That's what it is. So anyway, I just was fascinated by it and thought it was a really cool thing. And so I put it up on my show for today because I thought it was really cool. So Another little piece on that, courtesy tops the rules for the Amish buggy drivers. It's one of the first of the, it is the first of the articles in that particular PDF that's out. Their first chapter talks all about courtesy and that the need is serious. The most recent figures from the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation show 180 buggy accidents and 18 deaths in 4 years ending in 2000, in the year 2000. Most were in Lancaster County. So anyway, it just talks about how you have to be courteous on both ends, and they have a really strong do unto others as others do under you rule that's in there too. So you want to have respect for one another. I thought it was really cool. Just had some great, great information in it. And anyway, there are other things that the Amish do that are a little different. There are no child seats. The kids are in an open buggy. This is where the problem arises. If that buggy has an accident with a vehicle, you're like totally endangering the child's life that's in there, because they're not buckled in, they're not strapped in, they're not, you know, they don't believe buckles. You know, remember that?
Yeah.
In the clothing, they can't use buckles. They just, it's against their practice, because the people who oppressed them back in Europe before they came here had buckles and buttons, and they don't have any buckles and buttons. Very interesting.
Yeah.
It's a really educational trip. It was really
kind of
cool.
And they don't have mustaches either.
And they don't have mustaches either, because those people that were oppressing them also had mustaches, so they're not allowed to have mustaches. Kind of interesting. So anyway, yeah, that was our great little trip, our big tip of the cycling cap to the to Renegade Sports and the Farm to Fork Fondo folks. Tyler,
one more thing I was curious about.
We're doing
about
a great job.
What's going on with COVID-19 and the Amish? Did anybody hear that?
I don't have that information, and I don't have room to discuss it today, but we could look it up for next time, probably. But that might be interesting, unless you have something quick. I don't know. They're not using masks. They don't like to use masks. They are using them if they're in a retail environment, like when we went to the ice cream store.
Right.
They were all Amish behind the counter, and they were wearing masks. But Tyler did say he had some trouble finding venues down there, because most of the venues in that ride are Amish farms that we stop at, and they don't wear masks. They don't believe in masks. So it's just, you know, and you have to respect that. You have to respect their religion and what they do, and that's the way it is. So, yeah, Jed, it is a Sheldon Brown shirt. Yes, it is. Yeah. Look at that. You know, you can always tell a bike guy out there when you see something like that. That's great.
Yeah, Pete and Jed both commented on your shirt.
Oh, did Jed do?
Pete wanted you to explain who that was on your shirt.
Sheldon Brown, yeah.
Yeah, and Jed knew.
Okay, Sheldon Brown, and if you are ever traveling to New England, because I know I have some listeners that listen from far away, or you are from New England and you get into Newton, Massachusetts, you want to go to Harris Cyclery. Harris Cyclery is that is owned by Sonny and John Harris. Sonny is the elder and John's father. And the last time I saw Sonny, he was like 82 years old and going on about, I don't know, 15. He was he's a piece of work. He's great. Big shout out to those guys and his son, John, and they own this shop called Harris Cyclery. One of John's best friends was a gentleman by the name of Sheldon Brown, who was a mechanic at the bicycle shop, and they were good buddies. Unfortunately, Sheldon passed away and isn't with us anymore. But what Sheldon did for the bicycle industry was, Sheldon was, he was not only a bicycle geek, but he was also a bit of a computer geek. And he started really pretty much the first online bicycle sharing and actually even, you know, doing, you know, getting in contact. Hey, we have this in the store. We'll ship it to you, sort of thing. And so bicycle commerce, I guess we could say. And they were doing it in the basement of Harris Cyclery for many years. And when I first started calling on Harris, which was back in, I think that was back in the Bianchi days when I first started going there, because they were selling Bianchi bicycles. John told me that it was over 50% of his business. But anyway, backing up even more, Sheldon Brown had repair manuals basically repair information available online to anyone in the bicycle industry that wanted to know, well, how do I deal with this Normandy hub that has this on it or whatever? Or what kind of, freewheel do I use here? Because there were no free hubs at that time. But it was, and what is the distance between my axles on my rear hub versus my front hub? All sorts of interesting information that is still used today in the bike shops, because people will actually walk into a bike shop and they'll have, get this one. Let's see if I can shake some dust off of people out there. They'll walk in with a Helicomatic hub and they won't know what to do with it. I'll let you ponder on that. You can make your comments here and I'll see if anybody knows what the heck I'm talking about. But anyway, Sheldon was great. Sheldon was just great. I'm off track here. I got to keep going. Anyway, thanks for bringing that out though, guys. I do appreciate that, and I know that you guys are paying attention when you make mention of my Sheldon Brown shirt. So if you get a chance to get the Harris Cyclery, you too can own a Sheldon Brown shirt, and John will be very happy to. Welcome you into his retail store with that. He also has stickers, Sheldon Brown stickers. He used to give me piles of them, and I would go to all the bike shops and I would hand them to the mechanics, and the mechanics would go, oh, Sheldon stickers. You got to understand, this guy's a legend. He's an absolute legend. He had so much information. Very, very valuable part of the bicycle industry. And everybody would put their stickers onto their toolboxes. So you go into a store and you see a Sheldon sticker on the toolbox. You make a comment about it, and the mechanics would go, "I love Sheldon Brown. He's just like the best." And so anyway, kind of cool. I never got a chance to meet him. I'm sad about that because I would have loved to meet him. Everyone tells me that he was my kind of guy, and I probably would have really enjoyed him. But anyway, that's what it is. So anyway, we're moving back over here. Where was I? The horse and buggies. We talked about all that. We're going to go on to another piece here. This is from Forbes magazine, from Carlton Reed, who is a senior contributor for transportation for Forbes magazine. He's been writing about transport for 30 years. Okay, and basically the article is and was broadcast originally. It was put out on the 18th of the month of this month, and it says pop-up coronavirus cycleways deliver $3 billion in annual health benefits across Europe. Why not solve the healthcare problem? Put more people on bikes. It's always about bikes. Remember that bicycle talk? Always about bikes. Cranky old Ron, peddling Ron. It's always about bikes. So anyway, great article here. And it goes on to talk about the pop-up cycleways that are happening. And if you don't know what that is, I talked about it early in earlier shows, but places like Paris, France, have taken parallel parking out of one side of the road. And they coned it out temporarily and put bikeways in. And they're now taking a look at this and they're seeing that it's probably going to turn into a permanent fixture. And they're safe cycleways. They're really easy for people to commute on. It makes a huge difference. Then they're installing them on many of the roads in European cities. It could result in health benefits of up to $3 billion a year, claims a new study from German climate change researchers. Using the historic data from bicyclist encounters in 106 European cities, the researchers estimate that the temporary cycleways installed during the coronavirus pandemic have on average led to a 7% uptick in cycling rates. So each kilometer of pop-up cycleway installed has increased cycling in the city by 0.6%, claims the paper. So they're also saying we calculate the new infrastructure will generate $3 billion in health benefits per year. And that's kind of what this article is all about here. So we're going to see this as a thing. You know, it's another positive thing that's happened from a not so positive situation. You know, obviously coronavirus is horrible. It's evil. It it affects people's lives. It's not really a good thing. So it's a, you know, it's a big deal, but look what it's doing for cycling. Check it out. It's like, we're putting more people on the roads. We're putting more families out on bike trails. It's just a wonderful, wonderful thing. So there's a lot of monitoring going on over in Europe right now. I'm hoping that there's a lot of monitoring going on here in the United States right now, because this is a pretty big deal, and we should be paying attention to it as much as they are in Europe. Being such a car-centric country that we are, this is really the time to really, really pay attention. And I know that it's going to get lobbied against us, because we have a large oil lobby and we have a large automobile lobby here in this country, because it is part of the quote-unquote successful lifestyle of the American. It's not so successful if you're sick all the time because you're not taking care of yourself, is it? And where does that end? I lost Fran. She just stepped out on me, so I couldn't get an answer from her. But, you know, we really got to look at this, because you got to look at this from the World Health Organization, from right at the top, where people are getting together and talking about benefits of the fact that people are getting out and they're walking more and they're cycling more. And this is a very, very, very big deal. And the current health crises that are happening right now, it's, you know, it's being reversed by going to bicycles and walking. I had posted a number of weeks ago, someone had sent me over a post, actually it came in through my LinkedIn account, and it was a video of Paris, France in 2012, and you saw cars, and it was video, so you saw the cars, and you saw a few people on bicycles here and there, and lots of pedestrians on the sidewalks and all. And then it said, after coronavirus, and it was in May, I think is what it was, and there were hardly any cars on the streets, and bicycles and pedestrians and scooters and skateboarders, everyone using different forms of transportation that required no internal combustion engine. So interesting where it can go. We could change our planet overnight just by eliminating the overuse of combustion engines that we have, especially in this country. It's our number one cause of air pollution right here in the U.S., even with these new cars. And if you were ever around back when I was around, back in the old days, or you've ever been to a car show, and you smell the exhaust that comes out of the back of a 70s era car or a 50s era car, it's bad. I think it's worse than the Model T's and the Model A's that I've gotten behind.
Or you leave the immediate northeast and you go places where people have muscle cars.
Yeah, well, they have more muscle cars here too, Fran. Yeah. You just don't know where they are. I know where they are. There's if you're looking for muscle cars, and you're looking for specific towns, Bristol, Connecticut's a good one. Manchester, Connecticut's another good one. Norwich, Connecticut is another good one. There seems to be like little pockets of big muscle cars around. But they're around. They're totally around. And then there's lots of people who restore old cars just for the sake of restoring them, and they want to bring them to car shows and that sort of thing. But they stink. They stink, and it's so incredibly noticeable. And I used to ride in that for years. I rode in that. I didn't even notice it. Never even noticed it. So, you know, there's a big, big change going on, but we're not close yet. We're not even close. We could stop a lot of things that are happening right now in climate change by greatly reducing the private car. We got to stop.
Joel LaChance says nitromethane every weekend.
Nitromethane every weekend.
What's nitromethane?
I don't know. You better look that one up. That's Joel's. You know, he's a good guy. He's a heady guy. I'm sure it's something funny. But anyway, this is a big deal, and it's we can change the world. This is our opportunity right now to change the world as we know it. This is it. It's right here in front of us. You've got it. Within arm's reach, you can reach out and you can grasp the solution, because it's right there in front of us. And boy, we just, if we could just pay attention to it, if we could make this happen, it would be great. We need a lot of leadership on this. We need tremendous leadership from the top on this. Please tweet me, call me, whatever you want to call me, because your leadership is not working right now. But we do need this. We need this right now. We need to pull together. All of us need to come together, and we need to work together as a nation to try to take care of this problem, because we're going to be left in the dust by Europe. Europe is going to, they're going to show us how to do it right. Germany already is showing everyone how to do it right. The German economy is the strongest economy in Europe. They went after infrastructure change 25 years ago. You can fact check me on it, do whatever you want. I study this stuff. It just, you know, we got to make the change. We just got to make the change. However we want to do it is our choice. But I would like to do it on bicycles, because I think bicycles are the answer to all of the problems in the world. But anyway, I have a book here that somebody gave me and I haven't read it yet. And it's all about the bicycle economy. And I got to dive into that thing. I think it's time. So there are just so many things that we can do, you know. We need room for people to ride their bikes. We need, you know, we need roads that are dedicated. Maybe, in a big city, if you've got a grid pattern in your city, and I think they have done this in some places. I think like Denver, Colorado has this. There's a north-south roadway that used to be open to automobiles, no more. It's all bikes. That's it. If you want to get from the north end to the south end, you get on the bikeway and you do it. And you never have to worry about cars, because there they are. Now, you go off into the side streets to get to where you're going to go, then you're going to deal with that. But the smart way to do it is to take a main thoroughfare and make it bicycle designated. And then you can at least transport yourself north, south, east, and west through the city to get to where you need to go, and then you take your side trips off of that. Makes a lot of sense. Totally makes a lot of sense. Okay, so nitromethane is the ultimate fuel for the fastest drag racing vehicles. Thanks, Joel. Appreciate okay. that. In like nitro burning funny cars.
Ah. Right. Ah,
there you go. That's it. There you go. So here we are talking about it right in Forbes magazine. Once again, Forbes has been really on top of these things. I get more and more positive articles from Forbes. I'm impressed with what they're doing. They do recognize, they're recognizing the uptick in the bicycle industry. They're recognizing a lot of really interesting things that are related towards bicycles. So I kind of, they're on my feed now. So I keep an eye on them. So next on my list here, here we go. Here it is. Tour de France time. Here we go. Are you ready for the tour, Fran?
Sure.
It's on. It's on. But let me tell you, there are some things that are going on that we need to talk about that are happening. And, it's going to be very, very interesting to see, because the virus is real. It's not going away. And it, of course, has made an effect on the fitness of some of the riders, two of them being Geraint Thomas and Chris Froome. And their fitness was tested in earlier, early races, like the Critérium du Dauphiné was one of the big ones. That's usually the tune-up tour of the Tour de France. It's only like a 6 or 7 day event. I can't remember exactly how many, but anyway, it kind of, shakes the dust off of what we're going to be looking at for the Tour de France. And guess what? Geraint Thomas and Chris Froome have been eliminated from the Ineos Grenadiers team. That's it. They're off for the tour. Now, what's going to happen there? There's going to be some other things that are going to happen.
Are they off the team or just
only,
not on
only
the...
for the... They're off the roster. They're off the roster. So the Sir David Brailsford, who runs the team, announced that Thomas would be saved for the Giro d'Italia, and four-time champion Froome would have to settle for La Vuelta rather than compete for another title in the Tour de France. In addition to lauding the management skills of his former boss, this was Brailsford, Bradley Wiggins also noted that no rider is bigger than the team at Ineos, a principle that has served them well. So Bradley wow. Wiggins, by the way, if you want to catch up on what Bradley Wiggins is doing, he has a podcast now and really interesting and fun to listen to because, you know, you get
Bradley
that.
Wiggins has a podcast?
He has a podcast.
I could have been listening
yes.
to that on the way home last
We
night.
Should have listened to Why him on the way home that? Last night. We should have. But, well, we got another trip this weekend, so we'll do it then.
Okay, fine.
But anyway, so, you know, this... And Wiggins on the Thomas and Froome shock, no one bigger than this team. This is why Brailsford is so good. And that is your team manager. So anyway, yeah, right here, you can see it. This is, let's see, what is this from? This is from Eurosport. If you go to Eurosport.com, you will see, and /cycling, and you will see where his podcast is. I think he broadcasts off of Eurosport. But yeah, this is a big deal. This shows you exactly what's going on out there. I think it's really cool. We're gonna see a Colombian or a French champion this year. That's my guess. We'll see. Alaphilippe is still in. Let's see who else is still in. There's some newcomers that are looking real good too, and I'm just slipping my mind as to their names, and I'll probably have more of that information next week because we are going to be, next weekend is the start, correct?
Yes.
Yes, next weekend is the start, so we'll have a little bit more on that as far as that goes. It just, you know, one of the things that was mentioned here, it shows the strength and the depth in that team and the forward planning. They don't make these selections lightly, and Egan Bernal is clearly the one that they're putting their money on. They have always had this goal of trying to win all three Grand Tours as a team. Interesting way to do it, by spreading these guys out, and it could happen. That would be very, very good to see, just because it's historical. It's kind of a neat thing. So you can listen to the Bradley Wiggins Show podcast if you just go to Eurosport, and you can hear more about what Sir Bradley Wiggins has to say, because he is knighted, you know. Did you know that, Fran?
He's Sir Bradley Wiggins for a while.
Yeah, he's knighted. He's one of those knighted guys. So that's kind of a big deal if you're from England. If you also go to the official website of the Tour de France, which is www.letour.fr/en, if you'd like the English version of it, you can get all sorts of interesting highlights. I shared on the Facebook page this morning a 2020 teaser video. I started shaking watching it. It's just like so exciting. You get tears in your eyes. You start shaking. It's like, I know, I'm sick. It's all right. But, you know, it's a Tour de France, and it's happening, and it didn't go away this year, and that's just a great thing, and I am very, very excited by it. So we're looking at, from Velo News, this is where it gets interesting, just so you know. There's a lot of breakdown on the latest Tour de France news here. André Greipel is confirmed for his 10th straight of no Tour de France for Wellens, but Greipel is confirmed for the 10th straight appearance. There is Bardet leads diverse AG2R team, and what you're going to see, that's once again, we got some French riders coming in here. Let's see, who else do I have here? Stepping back, Alaphilippe and Bennett. So no plans for Alaphilippe at this time. So we still don't know at this time as far as that goes. Let's keep our eyes on Van Aert. Van Aert, if you are a cyclocross fan, you know that name fairly well. He's a big deal in the cross world. And then the first year that he rode in the Tour de France, the cross people were like sending stuff back and forth all over. We can't believe we got a stage winner in the Tour de France, you know, because he's a cyclocross guy. But he's coming on, and it's looking like the young Belgian has the legs and versatility to challenge Sagan in the points competition. But we'll see, because the team duties may come first. So there's great stuff. Here's the big one, though. The teams are unhappy with the strict COVID protocol at the Tour de France. All right. We want to read more about that. I want to hear more about that. Here it is. So what's going on is teams with two COVID-19 cases will be removed from the Tour de France. The ASO is rolling out strict protocols to safeguard health and ensure the race can go on. So if you have two riders or staffers that show serious symptoms and test positive for COVID-19, your team's out. So that means soigniers, that means team mechanics, that means everybody, massage therapists, all the people that are tied into the whole event, they cannot test positive or they are out. And if you watched any of the Criterium du Dauphiné, you noticed that once the riders came across the line, all of the support crew that went up to them, they all had masks on. Everyone had masks on. So they're taking this very, very seriously because it means they're in or they're out. And if you got a big team that's invested a lot of money in this and has a lot of investors behind them, they're not going to be real happy if one of the soigniers decided to go out to the bar one night and then came back with COVID. So they're just going to have to mind their P's and Q's. And the interesting thing is like, you know, this, you have to understand the Tour de France, as much as it is a bicycle race, it's a big party. It's a huge party. So there's partying on the sides of the roads. There's partying in the streets at night after the race comes through town. The bars are alive. The restaurants are alive. This brings a lot of money into these towns. So this is going to be tricky. It's going to be really, really tricky. And you got to keep your team away from it. And I don't know how they're going to police it, but they're going to probably try to do their best. But they're going to try to enforce that anyone connected with that team is going to be in serious trouble if they shut the team down. So we will see what happens, but yet another little COVID thing that we have going on. But we're going to be able to watch bike racing. We're going to be able to watch real, like, cool Tour de France bike racing. And we have been already. We caught an episode or two of the Criterium Dauphiné because I didn't realize that I actually had access to it. But anyway, yeah, good stuff. And we're going to see the Giro, and we're also going to see the Vuelta. They're all going to be broadcast, and they are still alive at this time. So health rules outline tour protocols. This is where we're going to go with this. I think it's a good thing. Let's see. This will be a really, really good lesson to be learned as far as how this is going to go. So the UCI bubble concept is central to the plan. The idea is that if everyone from racers to staffers and sports directors inside the bubble is free of COVID-19, the risk of spread is greatly reduced if contact with others is also severely limited. To enter their respective bubble, all riders, staffers, and other personnel must pass two COVID-19 controls. Anyone testing positive will not be allowed to race or work on the tour. Any tour-bound riders who test positive for COVID-19 as part of pre-race screenings can be replaced by a healthy rider until 10 a.m. on August 29th. So that's the start date. Everyone in the tour entourage will also be tested again on both rest days, September 7th and September 14th. Another key element is monitoring of symptoms. Every day before and after each stage, doctors must gauge the health of every rider and staff by way of health checklist that tracks any would-be symptoms and possible infections such as fever, coughing, shortness of breath, abdominal aches and fatigue, and other signs. Doctors will then rank any symptoms as moderate or strongly suspect and share that information with the race medical staff and COVID czar. A mobile COVID-19 medical unit will be at each day's race to expedite any required on-the-spot testing. So here we go, folks. Things are different. And I'm going to have to move on. I have all this other good stuff to talk about, and I'm going to have to save it for next week because we've got news in the bicycle industry about Louis Garneau and some changes and some receivership going on there. I've got word back from Giant that they're up to full manufacturing capacity, and that's really good. The world spins on. It's just a beautiful thing. So We are going back to, oh gosh, so many good things to talk about. But we will bring it back next week for sure. I do have a quick note here, if I can get it to open back up. Tony out there in listening land and bicycle riding land, he said that he has three topics that I may want to talk about, and it was all because of the horse poop, because Tony is an equestrian and a very good bicycle rider also, I might add, and he wanted to make mention about some of the horse etiquette out there. Real quick, he has three topics: bells, trails, and lighting. He found that when he rode the trails, if you call out on your left approaching from behind, walkers get startled and agitated. He started using a bell, and the attitude is totally different. I agree with you, totally. I have a bell on my bike now. It really does work. And if you do it far enough back, then they'll know you're coming, and it doesn't startle them. Absolutely. And then he said that maybe, and we can maybe do this next week, friend, maybe you could talk a little bit about lighting. He finds that that folks aren't taking lighting seriously. So often when the sky is dark and the storms are on radar, people dismiss it and think it's no big deal to be out there riding.
Lightning.
So we're gonna bring that up next time. We'll have a little bit more discussion about, you know, why you shouldn't be on your bicycle when it's thunder and lightning out. Wow. Probably not a great idea, but. And then he also mentions that he grew up riding horses, so he's used to the stuff they produce. However, he had several equestrians ask me, who is paying for all these bike trails and bridges? Perhaps you can remind everyone that these are mixed-use trails for many purposes, not just bikes or horses. I'd like to point out that these abandoned trails were set in place in the 1800s, and they would have been short-sighted not to reclaim them. If we were to try to create these trails from scratch today, it would be impossible. And he's absolutely right. So, anyway, that brings us to the end. What's going on? The Tour de France is going on. The Farm to Fork Fondo mini tours are going on, and they're quite successful. We've been very happy with their protocol. They've done a really nice job. And I've been leading groups on bike rides. It's really kind of fun. It's a really good time. And Fran led a ride this weekend also, as well as driving support vehicles. She drove the chicken car. Chicken car is kind of fun. So, anyway, remember that one of the bike tours that the Farm to Fork Fondo is offering this year is the Connecticut's Quiet Corner Small Group Bike Tour, which is on September 13th. And we will be starting and finishing from the Audubon Society in Pomfret, Connecticut, with proceeds going in that direction, which is very nice. Finishing points. Wow. So much excitement. Is it sustainable? How long will it last? Is this the year that cycling exploded and is one of the most talked about activities among families, advocacy people, city and state planning agencies? Will it end? And when will it end? Or will this spark the beginning of a new global world for cycling? Your thoughts and opinions, please. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. My name is Pedalin' Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycling calendar. If you have been listening to this on Facebook Live and on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page or on a podcast and you'd like to comment, send me an email, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. And you can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, and now on Spotify. If you'd like to contribute information to the show, just drop me an email. I'd love to hear it. Or you can contact me on the Facebook page. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week.